Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Tuesday, June 16th, 2015. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll talk with Charles McHenry about Wednesday's open house at the Juno Public Health Center. We'll catch up with C. Scott Fry, musician and manager of the Alaskan Hotel and Bar. Ray Friedlander will be here to highlight the boardroom. And we'll talk with Michelle Effers from the CBJ Engineering Department about Wednesday's community forum on the Franklin and Front Street Reconstruction Project. Those interviews, National Native News, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note Music, and more right here on a Juno afternoon, currently 72 degrees at the Juno Airport.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The World Association of Community Radio Broadcasters gathered recently in Chile for an international seminar focused on how radio can be used to preserve native languages. Elizabeth Troval has more.
Yusken Mapu, Comunicaciones Mapuche, presenta.
The Mapuche radio program, with Chang'e Anai, or Lift Yourself Up, has been broadcast in Chile for 22 years. It's one of several community radio programs in the country that uses the indigenous Mapuche language, Mapudungun.
Chewa, Chewa,
Perro,
Chalcan, Chalcan,
Trueno,
Toki.
The program is designed to promote the Mapudungun language and Mapuche culture. The show also provides information and news about indigenous issues like the recuperation of territories and imprisoned Mapuche leaders. One of the program's producers, Jose Payal Huacucheo, says that for many indigenous people, hearing Mapudungun on the radio validates the Mapuche language.
It makes it so that other Mapuche that also speak Mapuche while listening to the radio feel that their tongue, their language can be used in the media, that it's also useful, that it's also important, and if other people are speaking it on the radio, why can't they speak it in their home?
Maintaining and creating programs like Wachange Anai is the goal of the seminar for the World Association of Community Radio Broadcasters, according to the group's president, Maria Pia Mata. Mata says everyone has a right to their mother tongue, and community radio can help protect that right.
Radio is the best possibility for linguistic recuperation.
Mata was in charge of organizing the three-day seminar. The series of talks and trainings aimed at educating producers at both up-and-coming and established community radio stations. The seminar also included information on how community radio stations in Chile can bid for a radio frequency. For National Native News, I'm Elizabeth Troval.
Two Wisconsin tribes are finalists for health awards. Emily Bryant with WXPR News reports.
The Lac des Flambeaux tribe and the Menominee tribe are both one step closer to the $25,000 Culture of Health grant, and site visits are now underway. Carol Amor of the Lac des Flambeaux Public School says representatives from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation toured the community and spoke with community leaders just before school ended. Amor says it's been an exciting process that required the whole community to work together.
What they're looking for is communities that have good ideas for other communities to try and communities that have hope and are working in a positive way together. Whether we end up being one of the 10 award winners or not, just the process was very, very helpful in seeing that a lot is going on.
The Culture of Health Prize promotes healthy communities in the broadest sense of the term, including physical, mental, and spiritual health. 15 finalists were chosen from more than 350 nationwide applicants. 10 winners will be announced this fall. For National Native News, I'm Emily Bright.
The Associated Press reports Montana's governor plans to sign an executive order to address health disparities among Native Americans. The life expectancy for Montana Native Americans is said to be 20 years less than non-natives. The move is expected to take place today as tribal leaders wrap up a summit. The U.S. Senate Committee on Indian Affairs is focusing on Indian country business and economic development this week. A listening session and a hearing are planned as tribal and business leaders are gathered in Washington. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
Support by United Tribes Technical College, offering courses online for a career in medical coding and for updating your current coding certification. Registration available through August 10th online at UTTC.edu.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Tuesday, June 16th, 2015. Scott Burton, your host. It's about 6 minutes after the hour, and I've been joined in the studio now by Charles McHenry. He works at the Juneau Public Health Center. Welcome to the show, Charles.
Hi, thank you for having me here.
Yeah, it's nice to have you. So you guys are having an open house tomorrow. Why don't you start? Tell us a little bit about the Juneau Public Health Center. What are a few examples of services that you do there, and where are you located?
Okay, we're located at 3412 Glacier Highway, which is right across from the Twin Lakes recreational area there. Our parking lot's just straight across from them. We're having an open house tomorrow, as you said, to celebrate community partnership and our continued work to protect and promote the health of all Alaskans. We're asking people to just stop in between 11 and 1 o'clock tomorrow for coffee and snacks. And the nurses will be showing some of the things we do, like family planning appointments for birth control, women's annuals. We do immunizations, children and adults. We also have, child checks we do there. STD testing and screening and treatment, TB testing and treatment.
Sounds like a lot of services.
Yeah, there's quite a bit we do there, and some things that might not be listed that we try to get people taken care of for as well.
Sure, sure. And you say services for people of all ages, children through
yes.
adults?
Yes.
Sounds good. And so this is from 11 to 1 tomorrow. What can people expect? Sort of a tour of the building, maybe some snacks, something like that?
Yeah, they're going to have different rooms set up that are used for different services we have, and the nurses will be in there to answer questions and give out some flyers and some literature on the different things we do.
All right. Well, that sounds like fun. Charles, if somebody wants some more information, where should they go or who should they call?
They can call us at 465-3353 is the main number there. Or you can go online to the state of Alaska. There is a Health and Social Services website as well.
Okay, Charles. Sounds like fun. Tomorrow at the Juneau Public Health Center from 11 to 1. Anything else you'd like to add?
Please come on by. We'd love to have you and show you folks what we do.
Okay. Thank you, sir. And as I get our next interview, C. Scott Fry on the phone, let's listen to the Profile KRNN DJ Rob Weber produced.
Good afternoon. You are listening to 102.7 KRNN. This is the one and only C. Scott Fry, and it is Fry's the Limit. I think I'm going to get the whole thing started like I do every week with an instrumental. This was by Mr. Roy Rogers off the album called Sidewinder.
Scott Fry's been playing music for a long time. So long, in fact, that he's played in more bands than he can ever remember. I know that I've watched him play in Juneau now for quite a while, in a number of bands in a number of different forms. Sometimes he's the ubiquitous bassman. Sometimes he's the singer-songwriter. Sometimes he's the host of the open mic at the Alaskan Bar. A lifetime of playing music. I wondered when it was that he decided he wanted to be a musician.
When did you find that point where you were going to be, you were a musician? Was it early on, or did it come later?
Well, I knew ever since I was probably like 5 or 6 that I wanted to play music. And I know the exact epiphany, eureka moment. I was in Virginia, Newport News, Norfolk area. And in the kitty corner behind my house was my friend And he had an older brother at that time was in junior high school, and I was in like the second grade. But him and his friends had a band, and in their living room they had a piano and some drums and a bass and a guitar. And we all sat on the back of the top of the couch, and they played music. I don't remember what song it was. And it was probably something like Crocodile Rock, which was, at that time, the hit song on the radio. Whatever song it was, I knew the song and recognized it. And I smiled from ear to ear. And I knew right then that that's what I want to do.
Like a lot of kids growing up, Scott played a lot of sports. He received his fair share of baseball gloves, cleats, and other things, while he watched as his siblings received their flutes and guitars and so forth. Then finally, he received an interesting gift.
Eventually, I got an auto harp, which was not quite as tough as I wanted because all my friends were playing rock and roll or punk rock, and there's just not much room for an auto harp there.
But Scott didn't let receiving an auto harp for his birthday deter his musical ambitions. He carried around a set of harmonicas and would sit in with the guys in the band when he could, until one day he realized he should probably learn how to play something specific. That something specific became the bass. And it came to him in an unusual way, because he really wanted to play the guitar.
You know, once upon a time it was me and a friend of mine, we were both playing lots of Hendrix and lots of Stevie Ray. And we had a drummer, and we were a three-piece, but it was two guitars and a drummer. And we flipped a coin to see who played bass. And I wanted to play guitar. But then after listening to him play bass, I said, I don't think this is going to work. You're a much better guitar player. How about I play bass and see what happens? And it turns out that he sounded a lot better when I played the bass.
With bass in hand, Scott's played around the country, either gigging in regular clubs or busking on the street corners. Scott's got a lifetime of stories that he can share about life on the road. You were telling me kind of a neat story when we were hanging out a little bit, how you did some busking and you'd spent some time in Madison. What did you learn on that whole journey? How long were you down there for?
I was there five, almost 6 years, I think. I learned that I can make it playing music if that's all I want to do. It's not glamorous. It sure is a lot of fun. A lot to travel and new faces and new places every day. Busking is always a challenge. Some places are friendlier than others. Some places it's just flat out against the law. Some places you might be playing in somebody's spot that's been playing there every day for 2 years, and they get a little angry with you. You're in our spot. What are you doing here? Where are you guys coming here? Pretty good, dude. Where you come from? Why are you making our money today? But at the same time, you meet a lot of friends that way, too. More friends than enemies, I would say. You learn a lot about the country. You get to go see all kinds of cool secondhand thrift stores in all kinds of crazy towns, that, like Des Moines, or a small place right outside of it. Then you're driving through town, you go, oh, boom, 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 guitar's in the window. You gotta stop. How much time do we got? And go in and check it out. Maybe buy something, maybe not. One guy is always looking for old records. Guitar player is always looking for some type of old Sears catalog guitar or something, or harmony. I'd always say, you got any accordions in the back there somewhere? Not the ones with the keyboards, but the ones with the buttons.
Ultimately, patience, hard work, and practice are the things that have really been the benefit of Scott's musicality. While other people might not share their music, Scott is a big fan of sharing and being a part of the process, as he'll tell you.
And that's what music is sharing yourself with other people and being comfortable in your skin doing it. Some people, they love doing it, but they're afraid to share. And that's okay, too. You know, if it makes them happy and makes their life more fulfilling, just do it for their own personal reasons, more power to them. I kind of prefer the hands-on and the reaction and the pushing and the pulling and the giving and the taking and the sharing part with hands-on with an audience. You know, some nights the band can play the worst they ever played in 3 weeks. And you're playing four nights a week and you just have a dog of a show. Everybody comes up to you after the show going, dude, best thing ever, that was the hottest soul. Really loved your highest gig on that one part, which was probably a mistake. Where the train came off the track for 3 or 5 or 10, they said, but just love that. And you go, wow, that's the worst night we had in 3 weeks. They think we're the best thing. And then you have the nights where you absolutely hit the ball out of the park. Falls on dead ears. Nobody even notices. They sit with their back to the band facing the bar. But every once in a while, bases are loaded, everybody's paying attention, and you hit it out of the park, grand slam, and everybody wins.
So look for Scott around town and be part of the process, the musical experience, where you can hit it out of the park and everybody wins. Or you can listen to him here every Saturday afternoon at 3 on KRNN, Fry's the Limit.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, June 16th. Scott Burton, your host. And with me now in the studio is J.B. Blankenship. Welcome to the show, J.B.
Hey, thanks a lot for having me, Scott. It's nice to be here.
And
nice to be
all
back.
The way from Seattle.
Yeah, man. Just
the
up
mayor
here.
Of downtown Juno himself, Mr. C. Scott Fry. Are you there, C. Scott?
I am here via the trauma center.
Oh, man. It's good to hear your voice. It's good to hear your voice.
It's good to be heard.
So you're down there in the Seattle. JB, you just got back from Seattle. I know a lot of people are really thankful for the care you were helping C. Scott out with down there.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
How you feeling, Scott?
I feel a lot better. Pardon me. This time last week, I was not myself. But the wheels are getting back on the track. And put some gears in those wheels again. For all you guitar players out there, now's your chance to catch up to me because I got to start over. But just relaxing and trying to get stronger every day.
For any of our listeners who are not aware, C. Scott was assaulted on Saturday, June 6th in downtown Juno and found unconscious and was medevaced down to Seattle where he is under recovery from that assault. So it's good to hear your voice and good to hear that you're doing well. JB, what was your experience like down there with C. Scott?
Oh, man, we're just having a lot of fun down there. Just kidding.
Yeah,
fun. When I showed up, Scott looked pretty rough, but, I could tell he was still all right because he had good attitude and everything and still had his sense of humor, even though he was looking a little rough. Yeah, just putting one foot in front of the other. It's nice seeing it. You know, attitude makes a difference, and Scott's got a great attitude, and I could tell he improves by leaps and bounds every day. So, I mean, every time I go in and see him, he's looking better and better.
All right. See, Scott, what's the future look like? How many more days do you think you'll have to spend in the hospital?
That's up to them, to tell you the truth. It's definitely getting shorter. Pardon me. In short, I'm getting to drink by the day, but like I said, I still got to get my balance back and I'll be able to be my own self-sufficient person before feeling anywhere near anything to hurt myself again with. But I'm looking forward to the challenge, I'll tell you that.
Well, we're looking forward to getting you back. Saturdays on KRNN are not the same without Fry's the Limit, I'll tell you what. A lot of people have been noticing that.
Well, I got some new stuff in my head, and I got some stories to tell, but I'll save those for the stage. And there's a lot of new good stuff out there to be listened to, besides me and trying to learn how to speak again, because I'm now missing some teeth and have a brain scrambled. But I got some ideas for a few new shows coming up. A little different, but yet the same.
Well, we'll certainly be looking forward to those, C. Scott. I know there are several fundraisers underway or in the planning. Looks like maybe one on June 27th and or July 11th. Right now, you can go online to GoFundMe. It's pretty easy to do. Just Google GoFundMe, and then you enter C. Scott's name. And thanks to Chad Edwards, who set that up, we're approaching $20,000 of fundraising, which is pretty awesome, and I think shows how many people that you have affected.
Yeah, I'm truly blessed to have the friends that I do have, indeed.
Well, we're blessed to have you too, Scott. We're... Whoa.
Look, I'm really looking forward to getting you back, buddy. I can't wait to do some rocking and rolling.
I can't wait myself either.
Will you take care of yourself? We'll let you get back to healing. Anything else you want to tell us about, C. Scott?
Most of all, I'm going to say thanks for the phone calls and the support and the fundraisers. And I took a shower for the first time 9 days ago yesterday.
Thank God. So, I wasn't going to say anything, Frank.
So I just wanted to say thanks for the love and the support, and I'll make it all you somehow. I don't know what it's going to be, but it's going to be good. I'll tell you that.
All right, man. You take care of yourself, JB. Anything else you want to add?
That's it, Scott. I'll take care of what I can for you, and I'll see you in a couple days, buddy.
Man, give me a call, anybody. I'm at the Harvard Medical Center. They know me. I'm kind of making my rounds. I've yet to be out of my room yet, but they seem to treat me real nice here. And they got nothing but smiles and kind folks. And even kinder folks out there in the listening audience, thank you, thank you, and thank you.
All right, Scott, here's one of your songs called Peace Pipe.
Right on.
Oh, my goodness.
And here's a tune that's a favorite of Scott's.
Join the Flying Karamazov Brothers and 55 other talented performers for a world-class vaudeville show featuring everything from magicians to trapeze artists, tap dancers, and a 30-piece band. The new Old Time Chautauqua is a family-friendly show sure to knock your socks off on Friday, July 3rd, 7 p.m. at Centennial Hall. Tickets are just $15 for adults, $5 for children, seniors, and members of the military. Tickets are available at KTOO, The Jack, Hearthside Books, and K2.org. All ticket sale proceeds will be donated to KTOO.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, June 16th. It's about 30 minutes past the hour. Scott Burton, your host, and with me now in the studio to speak about a new business downtown called The Boardroom is Ray Friedlander. Welcome, Ray.
Thank you so much for having me, Scott.
Yeah. So this is an interesting idea. Tell us about it.
Think coffee shop meets library, but without the distractions of people getting up and ordering coffee or your friends or acquaintances coming and saying hi or see you later. In addition to that, think about the restrictions that could come from a library, being quiet, silenced, having those hour-long internet restrictions. This is a space where we try to merge the two things together, where people can come, use the space, feel free to take calls, meet with people, meet with clients, but then not have all the distractions that would come from working in a coffee shop or their home.
Okay, and where are you located?
We're in the old Senate building on South Franklin Street, and we just opened in May. We've been giving tours to people in the community and hoping more will come out to check out the space.
Okay, and you're saying it's modeled after a business that found some success in Anchorage, is that right?
Right. So the Boardroom is not a new idea for Alaska. It opened in 2013 in Anchorage, but it's a concept that's been pretty new overall for the country. So the idea behind boardrooms or executive spaces where people become members to use is that people who have been working out of their homes, people that are freelancers, entrepreneurs, writers, contractors, we're experiencing feelings of isolation. They're working alone. They don't have a team to bounce ideas off of. In addition to that, they realize they're spending lots of money on coffee and food to go out and eat. So if you think about it, if you spend $4 to $8 a day in a cafe, that could be anywhere from $125 to $250 a month just to utilize a space that then distracts you. So people all over the country have been getting together, finding space to rent, sharing the cost of the rent in addition to copy machines, paper, toner, phone, internet, and doing their own businesses, but separately. So sharing a space, having your own business, yet having there be people around you to share what you're doing and, you know, give you suggestions or ideas of if there's ways that you could better your job.
Sort of like a maker space, but in like an office setting, right?
Right. So in 2013, the Boardroom opened in Anchorage. It was an instant success. There are over 7,000 people, for instance, that came through their doors last year. And so they weren't even necessarily going to open the business in Juneau, but because there's been a revitalization of downtown, people like Bruce Denton, who owned the old Senate building, were like, let's see if we can support this new idea of how people define going to work and bring it here to Juneau. Let's see what will happen. So we opened May of this year. We already have some members, including a lawyer who just started her business or her legal practice, and they're using the space. They have business cards that are made that, in addition to having their name, have the address of the Boardroom, which makes us really happy because we want to be used. We want the space to be utilized by young creative energy and then keep that young creative energy in Juneau, so part of the revitalization movement of downtown.
Interesting. Describe for us the atmosphere in either the Anchorage store or this one. I shouldn't say store, Boardroom.
Yeah. So when KTOO did a story on us just about a month ago, they explained our space kind of like having an IKEA feel. But we would like to say IKEA meets Alaska because we have, you know, green and blue and gray color themes. And then in addition, a local photographer, Toby Haranuk, I'm sorry if I botched your name, Toby. We have his photographs posted around the space. So it has like a clean, open, modern feel to it. Yet there's 20 different workstations, so people can choose where they decide to work. It's one big open room. And then in addition to people becoming members to use the space as their office home base, folks that aren't even members can rent the space for events. And in addition to that, there's a conference room that can seat up to 16 people, has a projector and a screen. So you can basically give workshops, presentations, cocktail events, you know, concerts. We're open to anything.
Interesting. How does one become involved or become a member?
Well, we welcome anyone to come through our doors. I'm the community manager Monday through Wednesdays, and then we have Todd Antigua, who's the community manager Thursday and Friday. And people can sign up to have tours. Our website is www.theboardroomak.com. So if you sign up for a tour, your email will be sent to me, and then we can arrange a time where I can introduce you to the space, or you can just stop by and check it out. We're on the third floor.
And did you say Monday through Friday?
Monday through Friday. And for people that become premium members, they get their own key, and so they can access the space 24/7 Monday through Sunday.
Interesting. It's like a community studio in a sense.
Right. And we want to work with people. So if you go on our website, you'll notice that to become a member, there are certain rates, but we're flexible. We want the space to be used. We want to support new emerging ideas in the Juneau community and make the space accessible. So in addition, when you become a member, in addition to using the space, that comes with high-speed internet and copy, scan, fax, printing options, and cool young people or cool people that are trying to do the same thing you are but work on different ideas, so you don't have to deal necessarily with the internal politics of your office space. You know, you can have fun and still get the job done.
Well, it sounds interesting. For more information, give us the website once more, Ray.
It's www.theboardroomak.com, and you can also call us at 907-202-9009.
And for somebody who may not know where the Senate building is, can you give us more of a description?
We're across from the Rendezvous and also kind of close to Marine View. And just to give a shout-out to one of our members, Mark Wheeler in Copa, we're close to his ice cream stand on South Franklin Street. So when you visit us, you can also get a scoop of ice cream, too.
All right. Community Manager Ray Friedlander of The Boardroom. Sounds interesting. Anything else you want to add?
No, we just encourage everyone to come check out the space and think outside the office box.
Great. Thanks, Ray.
Thanks so much.
Baby, please don't go. You're so tired and I love you that way. Coffee's on, but there's no rush. I'll always make you a fresh cup, oh baby, please don't wake up today. Baby, please don't go.
Listening to A Juno Afternoon on Tuesday, June 16th, 2015. Scott Burton, your host. Here's some bird note.
This is Bird Note. With roughly 10,000 bird species in the world, birds have evolved many strategies for protecting their young. But only one species can literally tuck its chicks into pouches under its wings, then fly the young to safety. It's the sun grebe of Central and South America. Sun grebes are duck-sized water birds with pointed bills. Despite the name, they're not closely related to grebes. Shy and difficult to observe, sun grebes swim and dive on quiet freshwater streams. Both sexes incubate the eggs in a nest on branches just above the water. But when the young hatch, naked and helpless, the male takes them under his wing. Literally. Because only the male has those little skin pouches I mentioned. He'll swim, and fly if he needs to, with chicks on board until they're able to swim for themselves. The tropical water birds called jacanas also may carry chicks under their wings. But, lacking pouches, they pin the chicks against their bodies with their wings and trot off across the lily pads, the chicks' legs dangling below. Only the male sun grebe has evolved chick-carrying bags under its wings. For Bird Note, I'm Michael Stein.
I am a storyteller. My life is a story. My history, my culture, my actions are all part of my story. You are a storyteller too. If you or someone you love is a victim of violence or is acting violently, we can change your story. We can stop the violence. Asking for help changes everything.
Together, we can make a difference. Visit dps.alaska.gov/cdvsa.
You're listening to A Juno Afternoon. It's about 20 minutes till the top of the hour. Scott Burton, your host, and with me now in the studio is Michelle Effers. She's a landscape architect for the city and borough of Juneau, and we're here to talk about the community forum tomorrow night, all about the Franklin and Front Street reconstruction project. Welcome, Michelle.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for coming down. So could you start, for some of us, this might be the first time we've heard of the Franklin and Front Street reconstruction project. Just sort of give us an outline.
Sure. Well, it's the city does a lot of street reconstruction projects every year, so this is one of those. It's not really a typical street reconstruction project, though. Basically, we usually look at utilities, we look at sidewalks, curbs and gutter, drainage, and replace those as needed in any project. This project, however, being downtown, we're looking at the areas from Red Dog up Franklin Street to Baranoff, Front Street, Ferryway, Shattuck, Admiral, Municipal Way, kind of all those little side streets. And Lower Seward, so from Front Street, Sea Alaska Heritage down. It's a you know, pretty busy, important area for, you know, local businesses, tourism, you know, entertainment, residential areas. So so there's a lot of interest and a lot of things going on in this area. And so because of that, we're having a kind of a public outreach planning phase before we jump into design and construction. And we don't often do that in street reconstruction projects. So the phase we're in right now is that public outreach phase. And so we have a couple meetings planned, and we're trying to take community input and really define what this street reconstruction project is going to look like.
So it sounds like it's pretty specific, actual street and sidewalk centric, not so much like building and downtown planning, but it's the actual streets. Is that right?
Yeah, I wouldn't look at this as much of a, you know, overall downtown revitalization type plan. I think it's a piece of that. What within the parameters of a street reconstruction project, we can look at the right-of-way. And so what that is from property line to property line. So, you know, the buildings generally are private property. So you go from the edge of the building, in most cases, you know, into the street. So you've got sidewalks, you've got curb and gutter, you've got the asphalt and everything that's in between, which are things like street poles and benches and, you know, drainage structures and signposts and anything else you encounter in that realm is public.
All right. And this will be your second forum, is that right?
It is, yeah. We had our first public meeting on April 1st, and we went out to the community. We met at the New Heritage Cafe on Front Street, which was a great space for it, and we had over 100 people. And we just threw out a question, said, how do you envision the Franklin Front Street area in 2020? And got all sorts of great feedback and some things that were surprising to me. I mean, I guess the biggest comments we got back were lighting. Almost everybody said they wanted better lighting downtown, and I knew lighting was an issue, but, I mean, almost everybody said it. So loud and clear, we need to do something about lighting. Other things people talked about were another one of the big comments was color, art, paint. You know, these ideas, all these kind of topics, like make downtown more vibrant and bright, and I think lighting goes into that a little bit too, and make it more attractive and a place we want to be. And so those were pretty interesting comments. And so we took, and there are a lot more, but we took those ideas and we've tried to shape them into some draft recommendations and design ideas from the comment we've gotten. And so tomorrow night is our second community meeting. And we're basically going to present all the ideas that we have and throw them out there and get another round of public feedback on those ideas. And the meeting is at Centennial Hall tomorrow night, Wednesday. It's from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m.
All right. In your experience, what are some objects or, you know, things like benches or perhaps the covered over the sidewalks? What are some things that have proven successful in this kind of planning?
Well, I think I think it's most important to really look at the space and understand and the impact everything in the right of way has. So, for example, you mentioned canopies, and canopies are really interesting. When I started on this project, I thought that to me was something that needed to be worked on more than anything. Is when I walked down Franklin Street, I noticed that, you know, some of the canopies kind of feel dark and they're low, and then you've got a street pole on the side of you, and you kind of feel like you're a little bit enclosed, and the sidewalks are narrow, and, you know, what is that feeling that you get from everything that's around you, and does that make you want to walk farther down the street, you know, and keep going, or does that make you want to turn around? And so thinking about every piece of the right-of-way and in it. And so what I've tried to do is I've been talking to a lot of different groups is encourage people, you know, to start paying attention to what's around them as they walk around and how that impacts the experience in the street. So, for example, canopies are actually one of the most complicated aspects of a street reconstruction because they're private property. They're on a building, but they hang over public right-of-way, and they really impact a right-of-way. If, you know, the water is not caught from gutters coming off of a canopy, it drips down on the edge of the sidewalk, and if you walk along Franklin Street, you can see by looking down every canopy that does not have a gutter because it's eroded the sidewalk. So it's this issue of public-private crossover and impacts, and so then the question is how do you deal with that in a public infrastructure project? So we're tackling some of those issues, and we'll be talking about some of those issues tomorrow.
Okay. Can you remind us again the time and location?
Sure. It's 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. Centennial Hall, tomorrow night, Wednesday, June 17th. And I will mention we do have a website for the project, and it is, if you go to the city webpage, it's www.juno.org. And then if you choose the engineering department page, it's one of the top projects, Franklin Front Street, and there's opportunity for public comment. A few days after the meeting, we'll post all the documents we have from the meeting up there.
Okay. It may be too early to say that this is your second public outreach meeting. What does the future, the scope of this project look like?
So after this meeting, we'll take the comments and feedback we receive and, you know, revise and develop the ideas we have and turn it into a, you know, a final report that'll be available in probably late July. At that point in early fall into winter, we'll go through a design process and start the design for the project. And then at some point next year, in the next few years, we'll start construction, and most likely will happen in a phased multi-year approach.
Okay. Michelle Elfers, thanks for coming in to the show today. Meeting tomorrow night, Centennial Hall, 6:30 to 8:30. Anything we're missing?
Nope, that's it. Thanks so much.
All right, thanks, Michelle.
Thank you.
listening to A Juno Afternoon on Tuesday, June 16th, about 10 minutes until the top of the hour.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 16th of June, 2015. June the 16th, Bloom's Day, celebrated by James Joyce fans all over the world, commemorating the day on which the events of the novel Ulysses take place. James Joyce chose it June 16, 1904, because it was the day of his first date with Nora Barnacle, who became his wife. They met each other on Nassau Street in Dublin on the 10th of June. They chatted. They agreed to meet up later. She stood him up on that first date. And on the 15th, James Joyce, 22, sent a note to her. He said, "I looked for a long time at a head of reddish-brown hair and decided it was not yours. I went home quite dejected. I would like to make an appointment, but it might not suit you. I hope you will be kind enough to make one with me, if you have not forgotten me." And they met up the next day, June the 16th, went for a walk around the south bank of the Liffey in Dublin, and Joyce later chose this day for the setting of Ulysses. His publisher, Sylvia Beach, organized a celebratory luncheon in Paris on June the 16th, 1929. But the first modern celebration of Bloom's Day was in 1954, when the Irish writers Flann O'Brien and Patrick Kavanagh got together with the critic John Ryan and a cousin of James Joyce's, Tom Joyce, to make a pilgrimage around Dublin to stop at the Martello Tower, where the opening scene of the novel takes place, and Davy Burns's pub, where Leopold Bloom eats a gorgonzola cheese sandwich, and 7 Eccles Street, where Bloom and his wife Molly lived. The 4 men acted out the dialogue. They rode in horse-drawn carriages like those in the scene of Paddy Dignam's funeral, and they were supposed to end up in the red light section of Dublin, where the 15th chapter of Ulysses' Night Town is set. But they were too drunk by then, and they lost their ambition. It's the birthday of Joyce Carol Oates, born Lockport, New York, 1938, grew up on her parents' farm nearby. Parents were not educated, but they encouraged her in her passion for books and writing. Her grandmother gave Joyce her first typewriter when she was 14, published her first short story collection By the North Gate, 1963, the first novel in 1964 with Shuddering Fall. She's produced over 50 novels to date. Joyce Carol Oates once said, "A writer who has published as many books as I have has developed of necessity a hide like a rhino's, while inside there dwells a frail, hopeful butterfly of a spirit." Here's a poem for today by William Butler Yeats. An Irish airman foresees his death. "I know that I shall meet my fate somewhere among the clouds above. Those that I fight, I do not hate. Those that I guard, I do not love. My country is Kiltartan Cross, my countrymen Kiltartans poor. No likely end could bring them loss or leave them happier than before. Nor law nor duty bade me fight, nor public men, nor cheering crowds. A lonely impulse of delight drove to this tumult in the clouds. I balanced all, brought all to mind. The years to come seemed waste of breath, a waste of breath, the years behind, in balance with this life, this death." A poem by William Butler Yeats. An Irish airman foresees his death. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by Lumosity, introducing a 10-minute fit test to challenge memory, attention, and problem-solving to calculate baseline scores. Learn more at lumosity.com. And by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
you like to keep up with the variety of activities, people, and events in the capital city, you want to tune into a Juneau Afternoon. Find out about concerts, meetings, events, classes, and speakers that add vitality to our community. Get to know your fellow residents. Plan your schedule. Learn what's going on and how you can be involved. Or be a part of the program by being a guest and passing the word about what you're up to. A Juneau Afternoon, weekdays live at 3 on KTUO News, repeated at 4 on KRNN, and available on demand via KTUO.org.
Thanks for tuning into a Juneau Afternoon. Tomorrow, Lori Scandling will be your host. She'll talk with Rebecca Souza about this Friday's LEGO Corporate Challenge. Kim and Norm Haskell will be here to give us an update on a fundraiser to purchase a service dog for a local resident. And we'll learn about this Friday's Poetry Slam at Perseverance Theater. Currently 72 degrees at the Juneau Airport, and the weather forecast tonight looks like mostly cloudy, scattered showers developing, slight chance of thunderstorms in the evening, mainly south of Juneau, lows around 52, southeast wind 10 to 15 miles per hour in the evening, becoming light and variable. Wednesday is cloudy, scattered showers, highs 61 to 66, southeast wind 10 miles per hour. Thursday, cloudy, scattered showers, highs around 63. Thursday night, mostly cloudy, scattered showers. Friday, partly cloudy, highs around 65. Friday night through Sunday, mostly cloudy, lows around 50, highs around 66. No mention of rain in the forecast over the weekend. Stay tuned for the news coming up in a couple minutes.